Group of researchers has found that poverty intervention early in life can actually have a positive impact on infants' brains. Infants in the study whose parents received a direct cash gift of $333 a month had better brain development a year into life than infants whose parents received $20 a month. We're talking about this new research, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. This research happens to come out after the expiration of a tax credit that was part of a COVID relief package. Did you benefit from that? Did it help you do things to take care of your family? Would you like to see it be made permanent? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Our guests are on the research team for the study on poverty intervention called Baby's First Years. Sonia Troller-Renfrey is a postdoctoral research associate at Teachers College, Columbia University. Sonia is also a graduate of UW-Madison. Sonia, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Sarah Halpern-Meekin is associate professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah, let's start with you. Can you talk about a big picture? This is a unique, first-of-its-kind study. What makes it unique?
Well, we know that there's an association between income and how families do, child development, those sorts of things. But it's really hard from a scientific perspective to say whether that income causes those outcomes for children and families. And so this is one of the first studies that really allows us to get at that causal question. Does income cause differences in children's development?
Can you lay out the basics of how you and your colleagues tried to figure that out?
Sure. So in this study, we worked with partners across four metropolitan areas in the United States, in New York City, Omaha, Nebraska area, New Orleans, and in the Twin Cities, a variety of areas that vary in their policy environment, the cost of living, the demographics of their population. And we went into hospitals, actually, and invited mothers 24 to 48 hours after they'd given birth to take part in a study on children's development. We were able to have 1,000 mothers agree to be part of this study. After they agreed to be part of the study, we asked them if they would be willing to be randomly assigned to receive a large or a small monthly cash gift. The large gift group receives $333 a month, and the small gift group receives $20 a month. And in our study, we use that difference between the $20 group and the $333 a month group to get that causal identification that we're interested in.
So, Sonia, here we are with our first measurements of this. You looked at the brainwaves of the infants in the study. First of all, can you tell us what brainwaves are and what they tell us about that early child development?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when you think about how do you look under the hood to see how a little baby is developing, it can be a little bit of a tricky task. Now, what EEG is, how we measure brainwaves, is a way of looking at how the brain is communicating. So you may know that one way that your brain cells talk to each other is by sending little electrical signals from one brain cell to the other. And when those little electrical signals are sent, some of that electricity actually escapes and travels all the way up to the scalp. And we can actually measure it just by putting a funny cap on kids' heads. And so how that works is there are little discs on the cap that we call electrodes, and they work sort of like how your voice would go into a microphone, but instead it's your brain waves going into these electrodes. And why we like EEG is it's really, really friendly to babies. We just put on a funny cap, but they can move around, they can sit on their parents' lap while we take the recording. Another reason why we like EEG is we know a little bit about how EEG develops during the first few years of life. So we know when a baby is born, they have more what we call low frequency or slower brain activity. But as they get older, there seems to be an increase in what we call faster brain activity or high frequency brain activity. And so because we know how the brain develops, we can think about how kids may differ from one another by looking at how much low frequency brain activity or slow brain activity they have compared to how much high frequency or faster brain activity they may have.
All right, so here we are, Sonia. You've got these infants with funny hats on their heads. What did you find when you looked at their brainwave activity and compared the ones who were in the two separate groups, the ones getting the $20 a month payments versus the ones getting the $330 a month payments?
That's a great question. So one of the hypotheses we had was that the infants who were in the group where the mothers received more money or that bigger cash gift, we hypothesized that they might show more of this fast brain activity compared to infants of the mothers who were in the low cash gift. So that's actually, we saw some evidence for that. Particularly, these findings provide evidence that after just about 1 year of monthly unconditional cash support, the mothers in the high cash gift group, their infants showed more fast-paced brain activity in key areas of the brain that other research has shown to support thinking and later learning.
We are talking about a new study called Baby's First Years. It's an ongoing study, I should say. Sonia Troller-Renfrey is with us from Teachers College, Columbia University, and Sarah Halpern-Meekin with UW-Madison. Part of the study giving low-income families different amounts of money, seeing how brains and cognition develop among their children. Sonia, before we bring in Sarah for some of the wider implications here, what would be the next things you'd want to look at? We've got these brainwave differences between the two groups, a good sign. What would you want to be looking for in the future to see if changes are lasting?
That's a great question. One of the first things that I think I would like to look at is, you know, right now we took this measurement at 1 year of age. Our next step is actually to take this measurement again when these children are 4 years of age to see if we see the same pattern. Also at 4 years of age, we'd love to look and see if there are any differences in thinking and learning by doing really explicit cognitive tasks. Right now we say we might think there's association based on sort of broader science, but we don't know that for sure until we actually explicitly test cognitive functioning when kids are 4 years old. And then the final thing that we'd love to look at is, you know, of course, there's a sort of indirect path from money to the child, right? So cash doesn't just go into the brain. It gets into the brain likely by changing the environment this baby's in. And so starting to think about what may have changed in the environment that may have resulted in these differences we see is another question we would love to think about.
We're going to call her now. Mark is with us in Two Rivers. Mark, hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. First one, what was the magic amount of money? And you talked about a lesser amount and a greater amount. Was there like an amount that was in between that would be more effective, or would it require even more than the $300 that you gave? And then my second question was, I lost my train. Oh, yes. For the families that had the greater amount of money, what were they doing differently than from the families that had the lesser amount?
Sarah, let's bring you. Thanks for that question, Mark. Let's bring you in, Sarah. Now, first of all, there were just the two amounts. There wasn't a gradation where you'd mark a threshold. It was just the 20 or 333, as I understand it. But what do we know, or at least what would we want to know about what that extra 300-some bucks meant for those families?
Right. So I think what the caller is getting at is why those amounts of money, right? And these amounts were chosen based on what we know from existing research, from both correlational and quasi-experimental research, that indicates that amount of money between $3,000 and $4,000 a year, which some lower income families would get from, say, their tax refund from the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit, that amount of money can make a difference for how things go for families. But that amount of money is delivered through tax refunds just once a year. And so this experiment lets us see what happens when families don't have to wait for that once a year big check, but rather they get the money every month to help meet those monthly expenses if that's how they choose to use it. So that's how the amount of money was chosen based on existing research. And then the caller's second question was really getting at, I think, Sonia's last point, which was, we're interested in those mechanisms, and that is one of the next things we're exploring in the study. How is it that money makes a difference for families?
Thanks for the call, Mark. We're talking to researchers Sonia Troller-Renfrey, neuroscientist from Teachers College, Columbia University, and Sarah Halpern-Meekin, sociologist at UW-Madison, about the study they're part of on how poverty interventions can affect babies' brain development. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with researchers Sonia Troller-Renfrey and Sarah Halpern-Meekin. They're both part of a study called Baby's First Years, looking at how direct poverty intervention affects babies' brain development, giving cash payments to low-income families and seeing how they affect brain outcomes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, Sarah, based on what you've learned so far, I know there's some more to come. Do you have thoughts on policy implications?
So policy, you know, is made based on the weight of the evidence. And so I don't want to see policy get made on the basis of any one study. I think what our study helps to do in having a broader conversation about how income matters and how we can think about as a society investing in children is oftentimes those conversations get stuck on parents' behavior. So what does it mean to give families money? Well, what about those parents? And this study that Sonia's really led us in has helped us to see that we can move this conversation away from focusing exclusively on parents' behavior, and we can look at how money benefits kids. There's a really limited way that we can examine how, you know, one-year-olds are developing because they're little and they can't do all that much. And so some of the things that Sonia has helped to develop for how we can better understand children's brain development, I think can help us move that conversation to saying, how does money matter for kids without focusing on parents?
Let's go back to our callers now. Peter is with us in Kewaunee. Peter, hi.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead, Peter.
Not to stay on subject, but just a thought pattern. I'm sorry. I just feel as though the socialistic factor of our Democratic Party is trying to buy backwards from the college students being socialized into free money is to now the parents to now babies. Where is this free money coming from? It seems to be coming through a flow of our system.
We lost Peter. Peter, I think, raising concerns about social spending like this. Either of you want to talk about that and how it fits into the work you're doing?
Sure. In the case of this study, the funding is coming through philanthropic organizations. That's who's funding the cash gifts to families. I think we often think about money as something that only certain families get, but really we have resources that go out to all families, all individuals. You know, we benefit from having roads, from public schools, public libraries. So there's a whole variety of ways that we infuse resources into communities to allow us to live the lives that we do and to live together. So I don't think this is really about redistributing all resources and, you know, taking government control of production, which is what socialism is about. This is about thinking about how we invest in development for children. And we do that in some ways through having public education, through having safe parks for children to play in. And we're in this study thinking about some of the other ways that we can also invest money in children. This is not an uncommon thing. There are lots of countries like Canada, for example, that have different kinds of child allowances or child benefits. And so this isn't far off from those sorts of things or from the child tax credit that we've long had in place in the United States.
And Sonia, can you talk about the efforts to find ways to measure the impacts of these kind of interventions, which is a huge part of what you did in this research?
Yeah, especially when we're focusing on children, one of the things that's really interesting is you can really only assess what that child can do or what you can sort of get based on their developmental age, right? So when we think about measuring what a 12-month-old knows, that can be very difficult. But as kids get older, they can start telling us more about their experience, both by sort of what their day-to-day life looks like, but also we can start doing, the examination of skills like pre-literacy or math skills. And so it's our hope to follow these kids across their development and really get a deep understanding of what cash support or unrestricted cash support in the first few years of life may do for development.
And Sonia, how long are you hoping to be able to follow this this cohort of kids?
That's a great question. I think, any researcher like myself would love to follow them all the way to adulthood. Of course, it always takes a big team and lots of strategic planning to do so. So right now, our next planned assessment is at 4 years of age, and we're starting to think about new assessments maybe at 6 and 8 years of age, but those aren't all fully planned yet.
Time for one more caller. Dick is with us in Brooklyn. Dick, hello.
Hi. My question relates to what the root cause of the effect might be. Is it potentially better nutrition or more interactive childcare? Have you made any attempt to look at why the money is causing the positive effects that you've seen in your studies?
Oh, great question there, Sarah. And I imagine it's pointing toward future parts of the research here.
Yeah, so we would love to know the answer to Dick's question. It's a question that's on the top of our mind. So we're working hard to try to figure out the answer. And part of the answer involves analyzing the data we already have. And part of the answer involves continuing to collect and analyze data as the children grow up. We think in part that it could also just differ for different families. Different families have different needs, different values, and different priorities. And giving them money in this way that doesn't require them to use it in any particular way allows them to tailor their spending to their own needs. And so there might be a whole variety of things that families are doing that are important.
Look forward to seeing more results. We'll leave it there. Sarah, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
And Sonia, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Sonia Troller-Renfrey is a postdoctoral research associate at Teachers College Columbia University, and Sarah Halpern-Meekin is an associate professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. We've been talking about their study, Baby's First Years, part of a big team working on this that looks at cash grants for low-income families and how they can affect infants' brain development.